There is this radiologist, very famous radiologist in Mumbai. We went to him and said that, sir, would you deploy it in your hospital? We deployed and then he said, this is just shit. I mean, it's not accurate at all. I mean, it makes so many mistakes.
If you're doing innovation, by definition, innovation has to find a new market. By definition.
Yeah.
And if you're doing this TAM, GTM, all of that analysis, you can't build a new market. So I do think, even though I give that, you know, advice often, I do think it is, there are multiple approaches to it. I was joking with you before this that I always tell people, don't start a company that's a solution looking for a problem. But you said, you also tell people that, but you did exactly the opposite. So let's talk about that. Welcome to Unstarted. What is unique about this show is this is about you. It is for founders, by founders. Hello and welcome to another show of Unstarted. Today I have somebody who pretty much epitomizes doing the exact opposite of any advice I've ever given anybody, which is when they are starting businesses, I always say don't start a company that is a solution looking for a problem. But my guest Prashant Warrior decided to do exactly that. He's also the first PhD and the first scientist that we have on the show. So Prashant, welcome. Thank you for doing this. We'll talk about what the company does. I also have to talk about the plug for Mumbai. We are doing this. You are a member of Tech Entrepreneurs Association of Mumbai team. We are doing this jointly with them. So we'll also talk about what building, especially a cutting edge company like yours means, and what building a company which was doing AI before AI became popular. Means, but thank you again. Great to have you here.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Superb. So let's go all the way back. Your background, when I said PhD and scientist, would have scared a lot of people. The goal of this show is to actually make people realize that a lot of what looks from the outside is not very different from their own backgrounds on the inside. So let's just talk about born and raised where, and then what was the first few years of the journey.
So I was born in a town called Bhilai, very small town. Used to be in Madhya Pradesh, now it's in Chhattisgarh. And it's a steel town. So growing up, it was maybe 100,000 people. And you knew everybody. I mean, almost everybody knew each other. So grew up there, studied for IITs, went to IIT Delhi in 1997. And then from IIT, I had two options. One was to go for an MBA to IIM. Or to go abroad to do a PhD, and I felt like I wanted to study more, especially applied math. I did a PhD in operations research and AI, and basically it is all, I'm part of AI now, right? So I wanted to study that, so I said, okay, I'll sort of do a PhD. And initially I went in for a master's. I went to Georgia Tech for a master's PhD in operations research. But after I finished the master's, I felt like I need to continue. I mean, I think a PhD is what I want to do.
Yeah.
So did that. My PhD was optimizing trucking networks. Basically, trucking is the primary mode of shipping in the US. There is no trains and not a lot of ships traveling across the country. So these are large trucking networks with drivers, managing drivers, optimizing where shipments would go, who's driving a truck. So there are like tons of decisions being made on a daily basis, and I built large optimization models to solve those on a daily basis, basically running these. These used to run for days to create a weekly plan.
Wow.
And so that was what I did for my PhD.
And then after that?
And then I went on to work for a German company called SAP, but working in the US.
Yeah.
Working in the US. There I was basically building pricing models for retail products. So if you think about this cup, for example, milk or hot dogs or buns, right? I mean, the price will depend on where you are, where the store is. If you're in Alabama versus New York, the price will be different. Price will depend upon what time of the year you're buying. It will be maybe cheaper during holidays, for example. So, you're basically forecasting demand and optimizing price. So I worked on price optimization, demand forecasting, and then went on to do that for apparel. Apparel is even more complicated because you don't have a lot of historical data. So built forecasting and pricing models for apparel, working with the likes of Polo, Esprit, and so on. And then, I mean, about 14 years back, decided to move back to India.
What brought you back to India?
So it's a very interesting story. My wife had given her passport for renewal, and the passport had expired.
Indian passport.
And the agent who was supposed to renew her passport apparently stole the passport. And he told her that the passport was lost, and he issued a new passport to her. And now she didn't realize that, okay, this, I mean, it was not actually lost. I mean, she thought maybe it was lost in transit. And so then when she tried to get a visa stamped on that new passport, because you don't have a US visa, so you have to go to the embassy, get an appointment, get a US visa stamped. When she tried to get a US visa stamped on the new passport, she realized that somebody else had tried to enter the US on the old passport,
Oh, wow.
On the old visa, right? And we didn't know this actually. We didn't even know this initially. Initially, when she went in, they grilled her, grilled her for 2-4 hours. Then we tried again. Then after 2-3 months, we realized that this is what has happened. Then I tried to, I mean, I was in Arizona at that time. I tried to work with the senator. Senator McCain was the senator from Arizona. So I wrote
John
to him.
McCain, yeah.
I met his office, said, can you write a letter to the president, actually the president's office. And so we tried to do a lot of things to get her a visa to come into the US, but with the Department of Homeland Security and so on, I mean, with this kind of an issue, it was almost impossible back then. And so almost a year we were apart. She was here in India and I was in the US. And then we decided that it's best that I move back. I mean,
wow, just, so circumstances brought you back.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You made the most of it, which is a lesson in itself. So you came back and then?
I came back, started a company which was using advertising.
So before you go there, so middle class background, I would say from the IIT type of cohort, you know, not a standard journey, but pretty much what a lot of people do. Many of them don't become entrepreneurs. So with your background, circumstances were bringing you to India. Why not join a company? What made you want to be an entrepreneur?
So for me, I think when you're in the US, you are in a rat race, right? You go get your H-1B for 3 years, then for another 3 years, then you apply for green card, then you apply for citizenship. And it's very hard to start a company in that, right? And you feel like you're stuck, and you're sort of stuck in that journey. I was stuck in that, and I was like, I applied for green card, and I was waiting for that. And when I came back, I was sort of relieved that now I have options ahead of me, right? I don't have to work. I mean, I don't have to be in a job to be in the country, right? I can do whatever I want to. And so that was the idea. I mean, I really
wow.
felt like...
You know, I'm going to stop you there because this is, you're the probably the second or the third person, and I think it's a great lesson for people. Many people ask me, should I go to the US? And I generally encourage them to do it for an MBA. But you're, like I said, I have heard this story now multiple times that if I live in the US, then I basically every 2-3 years apni visa ki life manage kar raha hu. And that's not the life I wanted. And I wanted a different life. And it sounded like you, after moving here, felt the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. After moving here, it felt like, I mean, yeah, I can do whatever I want. I mean, I don't have to have a job to stay in the country. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, in the US, you cannot. If you lose your job, you're out.
Yeah.
Or you don't have a visa anymore, right?
Yeah. So the freedom.
The freedom of being able to do that.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, I was already interested in entrepreneurship, even as part of my PhD. I mean, in PhD, you could take many courses. So I did an entrepreneurship course at Georgia Tech. There was part of the management department. So even then, I was planning of entering into entrepreneurship even back when I was doing my PhD.
Yeah.
So this gave me that opportunity and I said, okay, let me explore options.
Yeah. Okay, super. Let's take the, because you're about to start your business, let's talk about the first question.
Hi, my question is, how do you land up on the unique problem that you decide to solve for? Is it just passion? Is it market gap or is it a mix of both?
So, you know, I was only half joking when I said, so the question is, how do you identify a unique problem and is it about passion or market cap and so on and so forth? And I was joking with you before this that I always tell people, don't start a company that's a solution looking for a problem. But you said, you also tell people that, but you did exactly the opposite. So let's talk about that. Yeah.
No, I think I made that mistake. I made that mistake because... So for me, what the story is this, right? In 2012, Geoffrey Hinton, who won a Nobel Prize recently, sort of the father of, He's the father of neural networks, or he built. I mean, they built AlexNet, which
this
came out
of the original AI
University of Toronto.
Yeah.
The team that first sort of built out neural networks and proved that you could train these algorithms. So basically, think about this, right? Before they published this paper, I mean, if you had to train an algorithm to understand a cup, you would have to give it all the features of this cup, for example, right? But now, with what they trained with these neural networks, you could give that algorithm basically 1,000 pictures of cups and maybe 100,000 pictures of other objects, and it'll automatically, without being told where the cup is or what the cup is, it'll learn what a cup is, right? So it sort of automatically learns from data.
And that is now, in the age of robotics and all, probably even more applicable, right?
It is. So again, I mean, I think so. That was basically image recognition algorithms.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in 2017, 2018, Transformers paper came out of Google, where sort of the language understanding also became much better. And so for me, I mean, personally, that 2012 paper was a big moment. I mean, we were like, okay, I mean, there is a lot of image understanding. And my previous startup that I was working on, I was basically doing advertising technology. So showing people the right ads based on what they have browsed for, what they have recently seen, right? And in that, one of the things that we were exploring was that if you are looking at a picture of, let's say, Deepika Padukone, and she's wearing a dress, can I sort of find similar dresses on Amazon, on Flipkart, on other Myntra, Jabong, and so on, and allow that person to click on that and buy that dress or similar dress right then and there? And that required image recognition, because you're now trying to map that particular picture to something that those stores are selling, right? So I was already working on some image recognition algorithms, and then I was like, I mean, this technology is very good, that it can understand images really well. And my hypothesis was that, can we apply this technology to radiology imaging? And if we were to give it, let's say, millions of images, radiology images, would it be able to understand that well? And would we be able to automatically report X-rays and CT scans using the same image recognition neural networks that were used for understanding regular everyday images? And so that was so we started with the solution that neural networks, convolutional neural networks, can we apply them to radiology imaging, and will it be able to automatically report those scans?
And so, you didn't think about how would you sell it, what would be the market size, how would you price it?
So that is actually where, I mean, I had a very interesting journey. So my previous company was acquired by Fractal, and so Fractal, I joined as chief data scientist. And Fractal CEO Srikanth, and he's also part of team, by the way. And so we were chatting, and he said, let's incubate a company within Fractal. So this sort of incubated within Fractal. So in many ways, when we started, we had a very research mindset. We were a research lab, kind of. We were building out new technology. We said, let's try this out. If it works, great, right? And then we'll think about how to commercialize. We never were like, okay, I mean, is there a market? Is a radiologist going to buy it? We didn't evaluate any of that in the first 2-3 years of building it out. So we built out the technology. Of course, while building it out, we spoke to many radiologists across the world to understand what kind of problems would be worth solving in that space. And that's why we looked at chest X-rays, because chest X-ray is the largest imaging modality by far, right? 50% of all images are chest X-rays. And chest X-rays are produced at high volumes. Not all of them are reported. Reporting times are sometimes 1 day to sometimes even 3-4 weeks. And it's a single two-dimensional image, which you can probably use AI to train and understand what is abnormal in that image. So that's why we picked up chest X-rays as a first problem to solve for, because we felt like it is an easy problem to solve.
Yeah.
It's high volume, and the opportunity to automate it is big, because again, our hypothesis back then was that chest X-ray is a slightly older modality. Now you have CTs, MRIs,
yeah.
PETs and so many more, ultrasound and yeah. So many more, right? That maybe we can go to a point where there's a blood test. You get fully automated reports, right?
Correct.
Can we also build out fully automated chest X-ray reports,
yeah.
Right?
So then how did that play out, fast forwarding through that journey?
So it's interesting, right? I mean, I think this is where I think the point that you made about the solution looking for a problem hit us, right? That when we built it out, we realized that it is able to improve. Like, for example, if a radiologist is able to report an X-ray, I can improve their efficiency a little
yeah.
bit, right? But efficiency itself is not significantly valuable.
Mm.
What is valuable is if you can find something new,
yeah.
right? And that's where we said, can we do something which can help non-radiologists do better?
We will come to that. So you build the technology and, you know, you had some of these business learnings. Given, going back to the question, so if you had to do it again at that time, or in today's time actually, how would you do it differently? What would be the advice?
Honestly, I wouldn't do anything differently. I mean, I think I would have done it pretty much the same way. Maybe I would have explored a little bit more of... I started as a researcher, so yeah. I mean, very research focused, no sort of venture background or that kind. Yeah. So I started as a researcher and never sort of looked at the TAM or yeah. where we're going to sell it, yeah. which market, yeah. right? So no GTMs and yeah. so on. So if I were to start now, I would have more thought more about GTM.
No, but I think there's an interesting learning here, which is sometimes, and not sometimes, oftentimes, in, if you're doing innovation, by definition, innovation has to find a new market. By definition.
Yeah.
And if you're doing this TAM, GTM, all of that analysis, you can't build a new market. So I do think, even though I give that advice often, I do think it is there are multiple approaches to it. I think, and also the second is, you have to tinker. You have to keep iterating and maybe come up with the answer. Let's come up with the next question where, so you were saying there was a little bit of a oh shit moment or a realization when people realize their jobs may be going. Maybe that created some barrier, but what's the question here?
Hey, I am Arjun. I'm from Vince Pilani. And my question is, how do I know what I've built is actually working?
So the question is, how do you know that it's actually working? Part of it is when people get scared of you means it's working. But how do you know that the technology is working? And then how did you realize this piece that, oh, where you were going about this radiologist, and therefore what do you need to do differently?
Yeah. So I think this is a very, very good example of how we sort of learned whether it was working or not. So we built these algorithms. And first of all, I mean, you collected a lot of data. So we yeah. went to hospitals, collected data, spent a year and a half building these algorithms. And the on in the lab or in the office, we were getting very good accuracies, right? We were like really good accuracy in the lab. And we said, okay, let's test it out. So there is this radiologist, very famous radiologist in Mumbai. We went to him and said, that sir, would you deploy it in your hospital? And he said, okay, why don't I deploy it? He runs a radiology, not a hospital, but a radiology center. And so we said, let's deploy it. We deployed, and then he said, this is just shit. I mean, it's not accurate at all. I mean, it makes so many mistakes. And that is when we realized that, I mean, the algorithms that we built, we had not tested on a lot of data sets, different kinds of data sets, right? And we had built on a small amount of data. And then we went and got a lot more data from many more hospitals. Global data, we have data from Africa, from US, Europe, right? And we spent more time sort of building those algorithms, improving the quality. And then when we went back and sort of tested at the same place and a few other places, then the accuracy improved. But I think what you have to do, I mean, if you have to go to your customer, deploy your technology, see if it's helping them or not.
Yeah.
And that is the only way you know if it's working or not.
Yeah. Right? For sure, I think ultimately the customers will tell you whether it's working or not. One investor, Mark Andreessen, who's obviously well known of A16Z, he keeps using this analogy that are people beating down the doors? That's when you know that product market fit is there. I think in consumer businesses, it can literally happen. You can see very easily. But even in enterprise businesses, how much business is coming through word of mouth? You know, you have other people reaching you. So that's one. Talk about what was this discovery about radiologists and how did you have to... By the way back, probably around the same time, we were looking at teleradiology businesses. They used to use probably technology like yours. And we had an oh shit moment realization where we said, okay, you know, all of this can come to India from the US, but in the US, a doctor or a hospital will only, as per law, accept a radiology report if it has a US radiologist signature. So the bottleneck never moved. It was still the same guy. So you could do all the processing in India, but it's the same guy who has to sign off. So neither are you getting a cost saving, nor are you getting a time saving. So it's amazing sometimes how you have to think about where is the bottleneck in the business and is the technology actually solving for that bottleneck, right? So what did you run into?
So we actually, interestingly, we identified by chance, I mean, we identified this problem of TB, tuberculosis, right? And when we started, I mean, I thought the market was going to be US and UK and Western Europe, right? But then we saw that TB is typically detected on chest x-rays.
Yeah.
And then if the chest x-ray is positive, you do a sputum test. So the protocol is that patient who comes in gets a chest x-ray and then x-ray positive, do a sputum test. Now, the challenge that we found across the world was that the x-ray reporting, especially if TB is in poorer parts of the world, x-ray reporting is very, very slow. It takes anywhere from 3-4 days to 3-4 weeks to get an x-ray reported.
Yeah.
And that is where one of our first customers, I was talking to this person in Geneva. I mean, they are part of this organization called Stop TB Partnership. And they said there is this organization in Philippines. They need AI to be able to read x-rays. And they basically run these mobile vans. And they have vans that travel from Manila. They would go to different parts of the country, screen about 100 people, 200 people every location, and then go to another location. So they travel around the country for 2 weeks, come back, they have a bunch of x-rays, send them over for interpretation and digital x-rays, right? Digital x-rays that are sent to a radiologist. Now it takes the radiologist maybe 2 weeks to read those x-rays. So patient who came on day one for screening gets a report 4 weeks later. And that's where, I mean, we said, okay, we'll deploy AI and we'll make that happen in 30 seconds. We'll produce a report. And then we deployed there and they found massive value in this, right? Because now what you can do is you take an x-ray within 30 seconds, you know it's positive, you collect sputum, do a sputum test. Within few hours, you know whether the patient is positive or not.
Yeah.
Something that took 3-4 weeks, and then going back, especially patients who are traveling from a long distance to come for the screening program, finding them again is very hard.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of patients are what is called lost to follow-up.
Yeah.
Right. With this, the lost to follow-up became zero. I mean, patient comes in, gets report and gets tested and starts on drugs immediately, right? So that was the first customer. And then we found that there are many more customers like that across the world who are doing TB screening. And we found that opportunity and we said, okay, that's a decent market. And we sort of started scaling up for that, for the TB screening market, right? That's again based on the automated chest x-ray report capability that we had. A second use case that we found was that lung cancer, right? Lung cancer is one of those conditions which gets diagnosed late. Because when the nodule is, basically it's something growing in the lungs, growing in the lungs. If that nodule, it's called a nodule, if it's small, patients don't have any symptoms. And by the time it grows and you have symptoms, it's already quite late, right? And late stage survival is, 5-year survival is less than 5%. So very, very low. Early stage survival is 95%, right? So question is, how do you get people to be diagnosed early? And one of the things that we said is that there are 1.3 billion chest x-rays taken routinely around the world. All of us take x-rays for routine reasons. I mean, we do annual checkups. X-rays, any surgery, pre-surgery, there is an x-ray. Infectious conditions, TB or cough, I mean, you take x-rays for that, right? So these 1.3 billion chest x-rays, if you were to build a marker in that which identifies a risk of lung cancer, we can then send those patients in for a CT and diagnose lung cancer earlier. And that is what we started out testing. This is in 2020. We said, let's try out this technology for detecting lung cancer using a chest x-ray. And typically the protocol is chest CTs. But we found that we could find those biomarkers on a chest x-ray, which could help identify the right patients who get a CT then and diagnose lung cancer better. And what we are seeing now, I mean, with data over the last 4 or 5 years, is that we are able to radically shift patients towards early stage diagnosis. So substantially, a lot more patients are getting diagnosed early through our intervention.
That's amazing.
So we went into lung cancer. And when we went into lung cancer and in TB and so on, what we also realized is that, for example, for TB, one of the challenges that we saw is that you provide an X-ray report. How do you show that to the end user? Because they don't, I mean, these are organizations who may not have an electronic medical record system or a picture archiving system.
Yeah.
So they don't have any digital tools.
Yeah.
So then we built a whole end-to-end digital tool for them to manage their patient workflow and be able to see the report and see the scan. So what we realized is that we have to build the AI for the imaging, X-ray, CTs and so on.
Yeah.
But we also have to build the workflow to enable the patients, enable the end user, not the patients, enable the end user to be able to use our technology. And that workflow sometimes has to be integrated with the hospital's electronic medical record PACS system, especially in the US and UK, right? You have to integrate, make it seamless. I mean, AI has to be completely seamless in your workflow. And those are things that we did to...
No, so you were doing AI before AI. let's actually take the next question, which is about timing. How can founders assess whether they are early, late, or correctly timed for a market opportunity, especially in rapidly evolving sectors? You have, by the way, I'm very inspired by the potential for AI in healthcare. You yourself just brought it up. And there are many angles to this. But let's first start with, and then ChatGPT, I think about 6-8 months ago, announced healthcare is their biggest vertical. Was there a oh shit moment for you? And given that the market opportunity has evolved so much, you started with neural networks and pre-transformer paper to today where all of this looks like it's available on tap. How have you kept pace? Have you thrown out all your previous software? How does some of this work?
No, so not really. So a lot of the techniques that we use and the technologies that we developed on, again, we adapt our technology to the latest. I mean, everything is in open source, right? So our technology is always on top of the latest open source technologies, right? Number one. So image algorithms that we have are best in class.
ChatGPT doesn't have better ones?
No. Not on the kind of things that we do. For example, detecting nodules, creating malignancy risk score, not at all.
And I think that's a learning because this comes up a lot, right? There were some tweets in the US going around saying AI itself has no moat. There are two schools of thought. One, that AI will take over and there are no vertical businesses left. And the other, which is there is domain-specific stuff. And I'm very clearly in the camp that there's domain-specific stuff. So give a little bit more color on. You earlier mentioned workflows. What is domain specific? Is it workflows? Is it technology?
So I think, I'll talk about two things, right? One is that for us, I mean, what we realized is that the imaging AI technology kind of niche problems we are solving with massive amounts of data to solve that particular problem, that is not going to be easily solved by a ChatGPT or Anthropic right now. Maybe they will solve it, right? Again, you have to be prepared for a world where they solve it. I absolutely agree on that. The second thing, which is I think what you spoke about workflows and all, right, that, see, finally, our solution is useful because I'm fully integrated into a hospital's workflow, right? And that integration requires work. And automating that is very hard, right? And so what I really believe is that for any company today, if you own the end user, you can keep on adapting to the latest technology that is coming up. If ChatGPT comes up with a better version for healthcare, I'll use that. And I'll provide that to my customers. I'll build on top of that. If Anthropic comes up with something, I'll build on top of that. My imaging technology continues to remain best in class. That I'll continue to provide to customers. The other thing specifically for us, fortunately for us, right, or maybe, is that we are, all of the products that we deliver, while they're software, they classify as a medical device.
Yeah.
So you have to get an FDA clearance to sell these. And
that's
so we have 26 mode. FDA clearances. So we have
mode.
A very strong
so
moat.
There's regulatory moat. Is there data moat? Just because you've been doing it longer, no matter when ChatGPT does it, you have more data. Is there any data network?
Data moat. So data moat is there. So the basic problem is that if you take 1 million X-rays, for example,
yeah.
right, the number of patients who are with lung cancer might be 100 or
yeah.
maybe 200, right? So you will not have enough data to be able to understand those problems, especially these kinds of large neural networks. Transformers kind of networks, right? They are able to, they find the more common things really well.
Yeah.
Especially and on everything, on language also, right? If you
yeah.
ask it something that is very niche, the answer will not be very good.
Yeah.
Something very common, it will be able to answer very well. But
yeah.
something that is very niche, it will not be able to answer very well.
Yeah.
And our business is solving those niche problems in the imaging AI domain. So there where we have maybe 100x more data on those specific things, for example, for lung cancer, detecting lung cancer on an X-ray or a CT, stroke, COPD, right? On those specific problems, we'll have way more data than any of these frontier models. Of course, they will probably build on large databases
yeah.
of images as well. And again, I mean, I always feel that as a founder, you have to be extremely paranoid.
Yeah.
You always have to be prepared for a world where ChatGPT or Anthropic is going to kill your business.
Yeah.
So we have to be prepared for that. But I think there are moats that we have. First of all, the data, the niche problem solving, integration into the workflows, the FDA clearances. I think all of these provide
yeah.
moats for
and,
our business.
And get as many moats lined up as possible. Mm-hmm. Like you said, FDA clearances.
And distribution is also a moat.
I was just coming to that. More
yeah.
hospital systems. These are notoriously hard to displace,
yeah.
well, you know, as a provider once you are in it. Let's actually spend a couple of minutes just on healthcare, because like I said, I'm very excited, hopeful of the effect of AI in accelerating all kinds of things, including a cure for cancer. Just help educate all of us. So AI can help early detection, which hopefully should help mortality. But if you have issues, and you know, cancer has been something we are trying to solve for the longest time. I hear about drug discoveries. I hear drug discovery can go on steroids because clinical trials can. Explain, like, what can AI do, and how robotics is going on steroids because of AI? Will we see cures going on steroids because of AI? How does it help?
It should. I mean, the hypothesis is that drug discovery should become significantly easier with AI. Again, I would say we don't do a lot of work in that domain. So what I read seems like there is a lot of positive
outcomes. Because you can simulate clinical trials with real world data, right?
Yeah, so it's not actually true yet. I mean, so okay. they talk about digital twins and being able to simulate trials and so on. But the reality is right now, trials are in the real world. You can measure trial outcomes faster. You can measure progression faster. For example, I'll give you one of the things we do, right? I mean, if you are looking at a lung cancer lesion and you're measuring progression, right? Progression, a small nodule growing a little bit, right? You may not be able to see it with human eyes, but with AI, you can see progression. You can measure that, especially if there are multiple nodules. You can measure progression very accurately with AI, and that can reduce the length of those clinical trials. So that is an area where AI is improving. Drug discovery and sort of trying out or experimenting with drugs, identifying what drugs might be best for a certain disease. I mean, there is a lot of work happening in that space, but I would say it's still early days. I don't think there is any company that has produced drugs. I mean, we saw recently this person who had a dog who had cancer, and there was this Australian guy who had a dog who had cancer, and then he did a bunch of research on ChatGPT, figured out some drugs which worked for the dog, and the dog got cured. And so again, that is probably drugs that are already discovered. It's not that he discovered a drug, but there is more opportunity, the kind of research, the kind of access, data, looking at real world data, looking at clinical trial data. If you put all of that together, probably there is an opportunity to discover drugs that are not getting discovered earlier.
Super. So Prashant, building a AI high technology type of company in Mumbai, where everybody who wants to build moves to Bangalore, what kept you in Mumbai? What are the advantages that you got in Mumbai that you wouldn't get if you had moved out?
So we have maybe 40-50 IIT Bombay engineers. And that was because we were in Bombay and we hired, and people came and joined us back then, back 5-6 years back. I think talent density is in Bangalore, I think, in some ways. But for
talent
us, talent attrition is also high, right? But you were able to find the right talent here in Bombay.
But IIT Bombay computer science, I didn't. Obviously, we all know it's top ranked. But many of them really wanted to stay back, and they love that area and they like to live in Powai.
The Powai area is very nice, and most of these people, they want to stay back. And if you get a good opportunity, a company like here to work with in Mumbai, they want to stay back here, right? Yeah. The other thing for me personally was that our business is global. India is not a market. I mean, market is US, market is UK, and then TB is rest of the world, right? So I end up being on the road about 30-40% of my time. So I just need to be near a good airport. And Mumbai Airport.
It's interesting. So you're saying global company, probably the best connectivity in the country, and as well as computer science backend available. So you could actually build a very high tech company here. Mm. So super, Prashant, very good to meet you. There are people who will look at you and say, you know, I don't know if I wanted to do a PhD, but then should I still think about starting a healthcare business? Overall, any advice to people who are watching?
I think go deep in your domain. I think know the problem really, really well. And identify who is buying your product. That's super critical. And the second advice I say is that just be at it. One of the things that I have realized is that you just have to deliver every day. Just keep on delivering some days will not be good, some days will be good, right? But you can't give up, right? And that is, I mean, longevity in this, right? The longer you stay, the more you succeed. So being able to stay in the game is important.
Longer you stay, the more you succeed. On that note, thank you. Wonderful to have you here.
You're watching Z47 Moments, the podcast by India's oldest venture capital firm, Z47. If you like this episode, consider hitting the subscribe button and the bell icon so you never miss an update from Z47 Moments.